This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, if you will indulge me just a few moments here, I would like to talk a little bit about current events. That is, this podcast is going to include a lot of things that are fairly new, things that have happened within the last few days or weeks. I've been on the road for the past month, actually driving about over 3,200 miles among 8 states and about 50 hours of driving, and going from Texas to Illinois on up to Grand Rapids for the IBM convention, from there back down to Chicago, and then on over to up to Wisconsin Dells to see the Rick Wilcox show, back to Oklahoma, actually, a visit with Doug Anderson, and then over to Tulsa and seeing Steve Lancaster, and then back through Texas to see my son and grandchildren in Dallas, and then on back home. So it was about a 4-week trip altogether. And during that time, I really had a great opportunity to spend time with family and friends during this, what I would call a rebirth tour. This has been something in which that I took the ashes of my wife with me, so she accompanied me on the trip, so it was just me and a kind of quiet ride all the way up. And I also had an opportunity when I was in Chicago to have a personalized tour of the Chicago Magic Lounge. So if you get an opportunity to go to Chicago, that is a must-see destination, but be sure to make your reservations well in advance. I showed up on Saturday, and John was nice enough to show me around, but unfortunately they were already sold out. So I went to see another show. It was a one-man show with David London, who happened to be in town, and he had a small pocket theater that was reserved, and that was an entertaining show. Kind of reminded me a little bit of Rob Zabrecki, in a way. Anyhow, the IBM convention was really good, and I hope you enjoyed the podcast that I did, daily updates from the convention floor, talking with a lot of the talent, the organizers, some of the registrants, the dealers, and others, things that were going on around the conventions. While I was in Grand Rapids, I was introduced to John Wolfe, who had driven all the way from Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and I thought that I drove a long way. Well, he came a long way also, but what was interesting is that he said he had been listening to the podcast all the way here for 10 hours, and he said, I've got more to listen to on the way back to keep me busy, and he said, I want to donate to the Magic Word, and so he did, and he is our newest member of the Friends of the Magic Word, and John, I want to welcome you to our growing yet still small group of those who have contributed to the Magic Word. For those of you who are interested in finding out more about how that you can help support us financially, please go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you'll see a donation button or a tab where that you can go and learn more about how that you can make a monthly pledge through patreon.com. So thank you, John, again, and welcome to the Friends of the Magic Word. The IBM convention was a lot of fun. It was not as well attended, but then again, it was going up against FISM, but I don't know how many people necessarily were going to FISM, but that kind of leads me into what I talked to Stuart McDonald, who was actually the person who had won last year in the combined convention, IBM and SAM, in Louisville, and he had taken the People's Choice and the first prize, and also then, of course, was designated to represent us to go to FISM, and he did a great job this year, and you're going to get to hear him on the backside of this podcast, because he just returned back from Busan, South Korea at FISM, and so he has some interesting and current things to talk about. So if you're interested in knowing a little bit about FISM and the judging and the contests and all that, he has some interesting things to talk about. When I was going back through Oklahoma, well, let me just say also thank you to so many other people, including Rick Wilcox. I just gave that short shrift a moment ago, just saying I went to his show. It's more than just going to the show. It is a fantastic theater, a great show, highly recommended. It's only a few hours north of Chicago. So again, if you happen to be in Chicago, it's well worth the trip to go up to see his show. And while you're there, be sure to take the family along, because it has the world's largest water park. I've never seen anything this huge. It is amazing there, too. I didn't have time to enjoy that. I just went to see Rick and then on. And then coming back to Oklahoma, I had a chance to meet a new friend, and that is Clark Bryant May, and he is the proprietor of a small magic shop called Rabbit in Hat, which is Locust Grove, which is about a village of 1,300 people or so. And so we get a talk with him. In fact, since we've had just me telling you a little bit about what's been happening with me over the past 4 months and my road trip, I think it's now probably time for us to break into the main part of this podcast. We have a couple of different people who are speaking, so I'm going to try to step out of the way as quickly as I can here and introduce them. The second one I'm going going to be having is going to be with Stuart McDonald talking about FISM. But first up is going to be Clark Brian May, again, the owner and proprietor of Rabbit and Hat Magic Shop and Theater in Locust Grove. So please welcome my guest, Clark Brian May, here on The Magic Word. Well, hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I always like to have an opportunity to share with the listeners out there opportunities when there is going to be a brick-and-mortar magic shop that you should go and visit. And this is one that's along the highways and byways, or I should say just a little bit off of the regular highway, but one I would recommend where you stop. It's called the Rabbit in Hat Magic Shop in Locust Grove, Oklahoma, which is kind of the southwestern part of Oklahoma, I guess. Is that right? Kind of we're in Oklahoma. So, and I'm here with the proprietor, Clark Brian May. Hey there, Clark.
Good morning. How you doing, Scott?
Fantastic, and it's wonderful. So I just walked into your shop, and I've not had a chance really to look around. I wanted you to kind of show me, but you apparently not only have an emporium of a lot of things, but as well you have a little theater as well.
We do. It's going to be the Magic Showplace Theater. Mm-hmm. It's presently under construction, and as a result of that, our shop is closed Monday through Thursday mm-hmm. due to construction, but to kind of keep a presence here, we stop construction on Fridays and Saturdays and open the magic shop.
And are you working on this yourself? You've got some contractors, or is it kind of like a passion project of yours?
It's a combination of all the above. A lot of it I've done, but then electrical work, we hire that out mm-hmm. to professional contractors, plumbing as well. And so it's a combination. But a lot of the detail work, not only have I designed and built, but also a lot of craftsmen from the area have mm-hmm. helped us. For example, the finials that are in the magic shop are replicas of those at the original magic shop in Disneyland in California.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so we've got a lot of interesting things in the design of the shop.
And it looks like a lot of oriental design. It looks like something that's all fairly fresh, painted with an aura about it of old-time kind of a shop.
It is indeed. The wallpaper in the shop is from Gauthier's in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. We also have real casino carpeting in the shop. The main display case is made from parts from a pub in New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
And the stained glass above what will be the doors that people enter to the stage, the theater, the stained glass is from the old Marrakesh Hotel in Morocco. And
wow.
our guest demonstrator's table is also hand-carved in mahogany. It's from Morocco. So a lot of cool features in the shop.
Now you say this is the demonstrator, so whenever that you have like a lecturer coming in, that they use this table then, or?
No, that's typically we have two demonstrators in the shop. The main demonstrator's table is by the cash register, mm-hmm. and when we have a guest demonstrator, for example, Doug Anderson is going to be here Saturday, mm-hmm. and he's going to be promoting his DVDs, he'll be working from this demonstrator's table. So people just come into the shop as customers,
okay.
and then whichever side they're on, they're going to be entertained from that magician first.
Because there's not enough room really in here for this to host a lecture, so it's really kind of people coming and going.
It is, okay. It is. Now, we also have, to give our magic shop a bigger feel, we've created the courtyard. And in the courtyard, there's a concession stand, and it has a built-in demonstrator's table. There's also a small courtyard stage. So Locust Grove has lots of festivals, mm-hmm. and when they do, we open up the courtyard, and we have entertainment in the courtyard, and the magicians are basically performing tricks that are for sale in the shop.
Okay.
All of the magic that's going to be in our theater, of course, that's available to view when you purchase a ticket for the theater show.
And how many people will this theater
seat eventually? We're making it an open seating design. There are going to be pub tables, mm-hmm. and we're looking at approximately 50 people that the theater can accommodate. There'll be a parlor stage. There'll be a smaller stage in what's going to be an area we call Houdini's Library. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be an old New Orleans-style saloon area where a magician will perform a bar magic. So during the course of an evening, the show will start on the parlor stage, then it will go dark momentarily, and then the next stage will open up, and the audience just kind of turns to watch that show.
Right.
And then it progresses to the next area, and then one final act at the parlor stage, and then that concludes a show for an evening.
And eventually you'll be able to host lectures, obviously, because you have a larger stage and area for them to sit.
Yes, and that is where the lecture area would be, in the theater.
Right. Right now, how many square feet would you say is in this area where we're standing?
Well, let's see. It's 24 feet long and probably about 18 feet. So, it's a small area, but we've kind of maximized it for the most impact when people come in.
It seems like an intimate parlor, kind of, or drawing room, I should say, you know.
Yes.
It has that kind of a feel, certainly, with the music and the clock ticking and everything, and mm-hmm. the tapestry and whatnot that's around, and the pictures on the walls, and beautifully appointed display cases, so they're not like the typical display cases that you'd see like at some stores. It seems like an old-fashioned apothecary or something almost.
Yeah, you mentioned the display cases. Those are antiques, as a matter of fact, and we got those from the old Cassidy Building in Guthrie, Oklahoma, which was the original state capitol.
Okay.
And they were tattered and beat up, and we completely restored those, and now they're back in use. And, we want magicians, when they walk in here, to get a sense that magic is a really classy art.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of want to up the bar a little bit as far as what people think of magic, too. All of our performers, when we do open the Magic Showplace Theater, we ask them to perform to an adult audience, gear their entertainment toward adults. You're always going to get the kids.
Right.
You know, we want to say that we're magic that's entertaining for adults, and kids will like it too.
And when do you think the theater is going to be open?
Well, this is a rough estimate. We're hoping to have it up and running by Christmas. If I slip that date, then probably spring of next year.
So Christmas of this year, 2018, for people who are listening in the future that go back and listen.
We're going to try to make that work.
Yeah.
A long time ago, they asked me when I was going to have the magic shop open, and I said in about a year.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, it was finally open.
Are you from Locust Grove area?
No, I'm from Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
And we were originally going to try and locate this project in Tulsa.
Right.
And we, when I retired from aviation, I told my wife that when we do this, I didn't want to rent a building. I want to actually buy it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because if you rent it,
I understand.
Anything can happen.
Sure.
And you put a lot of money into a rented project, and you could wind up losing it. So
Right. We
tried to purchase a building in Tulsa, and in the hip areas, it was just, quite frankly, too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started to look on the outskirts, and my brother lives 25 miles from Locust Grove in Tahlequah. And he said, Clark, you need to consider Locust Grove. Told me a little bit about it, and I was, you know, talking with my wife, like, I don't even know if I've been through Locust Grove, but we'll go check it out. So we went out here and had a look around, and I called him back, and I said, no way. It's just too small, not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So we continued looking. And a few weeks later, he called me back, and he said, no, you should really reconsider. They've got the Best Western Hotel, and the interstate is just about a mile away. They've added a new Walmart and new restaurants, and Northeastern State University is just 20 minutes away,
mm-hmm.
Claremore. And so anything, one thing led to another. We wound up buying the property, and then we bought the restaurant next door, which was in foreclosure. And so the big plan, Lord willing, will be you can have dinner at the restaurant, a magician will perform at your table, you can buy show tickets and see a show,
right.
and conveniently exit into the magic shop.
That's right, exit through the magic shop. Well, that's a great idea as far as having the restaurant. So you don't have the restaurant open. That's kind of way down the road after you get the theater
after
first.
After the theater's up and running, then we'll open the restaurant. And surprisingly, the little magic shop on Fridays and Saturdays has been holding its own. We've been handing out flyers. We're not advertising in Tulsa or the bigger cities yet because I don't want people to drive out just for the magic shop. I'd like the theater to be up and running.
Sure.
Yes. But for the locals, we've had pretty good turnouts.
And what's the population of Locust Grove, roughly?
Roughly about 1,500 people.
Okay. So when people are looking for that's why it doesn't come immediately to mind, like Tulsa or Oklahoma City
exactly.
or some of the other cities.
Now, we are just about 5 miles from Hudson Lake. And we do get a lot of lake traffic,
mm-hmm.
and so that's worked in our favor.
Well, that was ultimately what I was going to be getting to, is that why, I mean, you said you retired from the aviation industry. Would you decide that this is a good investment for my retirement savings to open up a brick-and-mortar magic shop?
Oh, it's just something I've been interested since I was 9. My grandfather was a magician, and he got me into it, and
mm-hmm.
I was pretty active in it for a while. Then I got into aviation and let it go. Years later, I found his old trunk of apparatus in our storage shed, so I got it out, and one thing led to another. But what really got me interested to start a project like this and on this scale is our first visit to the Magic Castle. Mm-hmm. That's the first time my wife and I had ever seen magic that was highly sophisticated, totally geared toward adults. Right. And I thought, wow, wouldn't that be cool to create something on a small scale like that in Oklahoma?
And what year would that have been that planted that in your memory?
Let's see. That would probably have been about 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, I would say that kind of launched the idea. And we also collect and deal in antiques. Mm-hmm. And I noticed at the Magic Castle, it was plentiful in antiques. Right. And I just thought, man, what a classy combination, sophisticated magic, old antiques. And mm-hmm. so that kind of is how we got the idea for decorating our magic shop. And the theater is even going to be a little more opulent than the magic shop.
But again, with the advent of the online shops that are proliferating everywhere and people being able to operate out of the garage or for drop shipping or whatever, it seems that there are fewer and fewer brick and mortar shops that are opening. I mean, and so you're kind of flying in the face of all that, of actually saying, I'm taking a leap of faith here.
Well, so. And not only a leap of faith, but a big factor is we own the building.
Yeah.
And so we're not paying...
Just pay taxes.
Yeah, we just pay the taxes on the mm-hmm. building. Mm-hmm. And I've had many magicians come in here and say, wow, you guys are as cheap as some of the online stores.
Yeah.
And we do try to be competitive. But I would say a big advantage is the fact of that we own the property outright.
Right. Well, I think that's true then, Clark, as far as what the... having to compete with the online shops, because I remember talking with Emery... Williams from Tucson, and that he had, I don't know if he still does, a brick-and-mortar magic shop, and he decided that he was going to compete with them, and so he's got like a computer in the shop. So mm-hmm. People are walking around the shop, and they're looking at something. They might scan that code or something and try and find it cheaper, and they'll say, well, I can get it over here. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, just use my computer, and you can see, and basically he would match whatever it is. He said, well, stop and think also, how much does it cost for shipping, and how long are you going to have to wait for that product, whatever. Right. So there are advantages, obviously, of seeing it right now. And also, it's nothing better than a live demonstration, which is unparalleled. That's, I think, one of the main things you can get at a brick-and-mortar magic shop, because if you're going to be watching something online, even a video on YouTube or even the demonstration, I guess, that might be the instructional video, there's still nothing better than someone who is working with you to say, here's how this hopping halves works, or whatever that the trick might be that you're buying, to have a demonstrator to go through this so you have a personal instruction and workshop, basically.
Oh, absolutely. And one thing that we encourage our demonstrators to do is to make each trick its own show. Mm-hmm. Really put on a show with that trick. Really try to your best to amaze and entertain your customer.
Right.
And so that helps us. Also, I think once all the pieces of this project are up and running, they'll play off each other. People will have dinner and they'll say, hey, let's go to the magic shop. Or they'll have dinner and say, hey, let's go buy tickets for the show tonight. Mm-hmm. People who exit the show say, hey, oh, I love that trick. Let's buy it,
Right.
So they kind of work together, I think, once we have everything up and running.
Yeah, ultimately, that you're going to be having to advertise a lot more. I noticed that in Oklahoma, they don't have signage or billboards, that are out there. I mean, I just came from Wisconsin Dells, and they've got all these billboards going to be coming in. Just like in Vegas, you've got all kinds of show cards and everything around town and at the airport and whatnot, and billboards. The point is that I think there would have to be something in which you're going to try to get people to come off the highway to come over here. So, again, this is not a destination location as far as coming to Locust Grove like some other larger cities would be. So you have to, I would think, have a way of trying to bring them in.
I would agree. And that's, and like I say, once all the pieces are up and running, mm-hmm. then we probably will get with the Oklahoma Department of Tourism and work on a sign with the Department of Transportation and then also general advertising.
So you firmly believe if you build it, they will come?
That's proven true already. You're here, for example.
Here we are. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so when was this built, actually? When did you finally open the door?
Let's see. We opened the doors on Black Friday of 2016, and on that day we had 413 people come through the gates.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Where are they coming from?
And well, that happened to be a festival in Locust Grove that day,
so
we timed it real well. And then on our last festival, we had about 200 or so come mm-hmm. through the gate. So the festivals work out really well, and the courtyard is kind of a magnet. I mean, there's a magician out there performing, and people mm-hmm. can't resist but walk in, and there's a free show going on, and then mm-hmm. they come into the magic shop.
Right. How many festivals do they do a year?
Well, let's see. They have a antique car festival. They have a watermelon festival. They have Founders Day. They usually have something for Christmas and then the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. And then we hope to start creating some of our own events. The restaurant, for example, has a pretty large parking lot, and mm-hmm. we've recently purchased a show tent. So we're going to try to create some magic art entertainment type festivals ourselves.
That's not a bad idea of having a magic festival, basically.
Yeah, just create our own draw. Mm-hmm. You know, I told Marcia when we started this, I said, I can't depend
on... Your wife?
On, yes, yeah. Marcia's my wife. We can't depend on local traffic to support mm-hmm. this, so right. we're going to have to create a draw. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the plan.
You know, that's something that is fairly foreign to Americans, and that is a festival, particularly a magic festival. They have it in Canada and certainly overseas in Germany and elsewhere, and they're very popular and very successful. Mm-hmm. But people know what other festivals are, but they don't understand what a magic festival is from the standpoint of having other shows. They're not just lectures for magicians like a convention typically, you know, has shows, etc., but it's really more for the public and different things that are happening with different things happening around the town. So that's certainly a thought here.
Right, and we would probably combine magic shows with art exhibits and the crafts and other entertainers, variety-type entertainers,
right.
and make the appeal wider than just magic.
Yeah, you absolutely have to. You know, mm-hmm. the other kinds of crafts and arts and crafts and places that are going to be, you know, setting up their booths and whatnot that you could encourage them to come and sell, particularly if you're going to be having something that might be magic related or some artists or something mm-hmm. that have 3D art of some sort or stereo optograms or, you know, something that has a magical theme. You know, it would be great if they had those kinds of booths that they could sell things there as well. But again, that would be an arts and crafts festival that people would want to come, not just for the magic, but also for the other stuff. You know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And there are magicians in Tulsa who have their own magic-related businesses, mm-hmm. and we would talk with them and encourage them to be part of a festival as well.
How many magicians would you say there are in Locust Grove, aside from yourself, and within a larger square-mile area?
Well, if you include Tulsa, I would say probably 40, maybe 50 at the most.
And Tulsa, how far from here?
And Tulsa is about a 45-minute drive from
and
here.
And Stillwell is about what?
I'm not sure.
30, 40 miles?
Probably,
or so also.
Probably.
And there are probably a lot of college students over there then as well.
Yes, and there are magicians in Tahlequah. That's 25 minutes away. And surprisingly, there are a few in Pryor, which is just 15 minutes away. Mm-hmm. And we've recently started a magic club here at the shop. It's been temporarily postponed due to some
construction
in the area where we were hosting the club. Mm-hmm. But we're doing that to promote interest in magic as well.
Okay. And you have a lot of things I see, obviously, over here that are for sale. That do you feel that you tend to cater more towards the new magician, beginner magician, professional, a little bit of all, or what?
Absolutely. Our main source of revenue are new people interested in magic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of parents will buy magic sets for kids. We do have magicians who come in, though, for supplies like mm-hmm. rope and flash paper and that sort of thing.
Sell blank decks or
yep.
you know, things
yep.
like that?
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
But I would think, yeah, with the lake that's nearby, you have a lot of tourists who are coming into the area, obviously, who are boating or enjoying the water sports or whatever mm-hmm. that would come over.
And I've noticed that the tricks that we sell the most are the ones that we demonstrate. You know,
of course.
And
well, of course.
They love that.
Yeah.
And then also, though, we're getting our demonstrators for tricks that aren't convenient to demonstrate to give a colorful explanation of the tricks. Hey, let me tell you about this. This is really cool, blah, blah, blah. And then
yeah.
tell them about that, though. But most of our business is general public.
Who are the demonstrators when you talk about that? I mean, is there another local magician here in town, or do they come down from Tulsa?
Well, Roger Cornelison, he was demonstrating for us for quite a while, and then he's recently gotten married, so he's had to make some changes in his schedule.
He lives here locally?
He lives in Tulsa.
Okay.
Russell Turner has been a guest magician from time to time. He's from Fort Smith. Doug Anderson has popped in and performed for us. Magical Michael Stefanik from Oklahoma City.
I know him.
He's come and performed for us. So we keep kind of a regular flow of guest magicians in and out of the shop.
And whenever they come in, I know Doug has things to sell. The other guys also kind of sell things, or is it just that demonstrating what you have
no,
in the shop?
No, Doug's event this time is more of a special event promoting his product. The other magicians, we have a list of effects that we want them to demonstrate that day, and they know about that in advance. They're well-practiced, and then they come in and do that.
So how would people find out that Doug's here or any other demonstrators, because they don't come in every day?
Well, Doug's event has been advertised through flyers, and we've had several people putting out flyers in all the local towns in about a 40-mile radius from here. So, and I've gotten callbacks saying that they're going to come, so I think it's going to be well attended.
And you got an email list, I assume, as well.
We do. We do send information out on email. We also have a Facebook page, and we've gotten good response from that. So for keeping our advertising limited until the theater's up and running, it seems to be working pretty well.
And do you have a lot of people who are coming in and attending? I mean, the demonstrations, perhaps. I mean, like later, whenever the Doug's going to be demonstrating. I mean, like one or two at a time, kind of drifting in. I mean, they're not coming in at a certain time, I guess.
No, it's just throughout the day. Doug could be demonstrating, and we would have people come in and watch him a little bit and then come over to the other demonstrator's table for some entertainment. So it's just people in and out throughout the day.
Gotcha. Okay. And as far as sales go, what would you say one of your popular sellers?
Oh, let's see. We've got the Oddball, which is a basic starter magic trick. We've got the dynamic coins. We've got the disappearing card case, the zigzag cards, the penetration deck. Just the standard beginner tricks are good selling items.
That's what I think.
We also have some high-end magic wands that are popular with students. Mm-hmm. And but surprisingly, the high school students buy all of our card decks. We carry a lot of high-end card decks, and they collect them. And I'm surprised to find that I
have
sell so many card decks.
About going to the school and actually teaching a class, like after school or evenings or weekends or something?
We've been asked several times to do that, and we're telling people in the future we're going to entertain that. Right now, there's so much involved in the theater. I've got to kind of stay focused on that.
When it's a one-man operation, I understand. It's not like you've got a bunch of minions going out and doing this.
Now, we do have students who demonstrate in the magic shop from time to time, and I let people know that they're student demonstrators.
Right.
You know, they're kind of learning. And
you give private lessons here from time to time?
Yes. Yep. So anyway, the locals have been real good to us.
You mentioned Facebook and a couple of other things, but do you have an online presence? So if somebody wanted to order?
No, we don't have a website yet, and we're not going to get that up and running until the theater is well ready to open. And then as soon as the website is up, then you'll be able to buy tickets at that time.
Right. Well, it sounds great. Sounds like, I mean, this is someplace, again, I think people should stop by and visit if you happen to be, guys, driving through Oklahoma or anywhere that's going to be in the vicinity to come by again and to support your brick-and-mortar magic shop and at least come in and say hello to Clark and check us out. And if you don't make it until after the theater opens, then you need to stop by then. And the restaurant and everything, it sounds like it's going to be just a phenomenal location here.
Oh, we think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And in the event it were to totally fail, I'm going to have one heck of a magic room.
And an interesting story to tell.
Indeed.
All right, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for coming by.
So with the Magic Word Podcast, I'm here at Rabbit in Hat, not Rabbit in the Hat, but Rabbit in Hat Magic Shop in Locust Grove, Oklahoma. That was Clark Brian May. This is Scotty out.
I want to thank Clark for being my guest, and I wish him nothing but the best, of course, for his new magic shop. And if you ever get anywhere near Locust Grove, you got to go by and take a look at this place. It really is a beautiful work of art and a real passion project, as you can tell from his voice and the way that he describes this. And if you look at some of the pictures that are on the blog at themagicwordpodcast.com, you can see how beautiful this really is. And I can see the vision he has as far as building the theater in there, and I hope everything all goes well. Well, next we're going to be hearing from Stuart McDonald, who has just returned from Busan, South Korea, and FISM. He was a world-class performer who was promoted to go to the FISM this past year in South Korea, and I happened to catch him just as he had woken up, I think, from his nap, still a little bit suffering from jet lag. He has a lot of stories and a lot of things to talk about, and I wish we had more time to discuss all the different things that are in his mind, just to kind of get this out there, certainly. but he has a different perspective from FISM and also about competing. And I think that it's interesting for you to hear something that's fresh, and particularly because this is quite topical since FISM was just ended this past week, and the next FISM is going to be in Quebec, Canada. So please welcome my guest, Stuart McDonald, here on The Magic Word. Hey, Stuart. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Scott. How are you?
I am doing fine. Are you well rested?
No, of course not.
How many hours is it actually from here to South Korea?
Let's see here. It was 11 hours from, I think it's Nagoya Airport in Japan, and then another. So about 13 hours of flying, somewhere in there, 13, 14 hours.
And you're up in Minneapolis, or where are you?
Adrian, Michigan.
Michigan, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. A long time. It's quite a journey.
Yeah. Well, it's actually a 21-hour journey, you know, when you put everything into it, when you have to get to the airport on, you know, a certain time.
Right.
We're so screwed up. I woke up at 5 o'clock this morning going, I want a steak.
You're ready for dinner. Yeah.
Yeah, I am.
Well, so tell me about your experience. What's been going on? What happened? I mean, as far as like, let me back up. What did you win that put you into the category to be qualified for FISM?
Well, that happened a year ago, and that was at the Combined Convention in Louisville.
Right.
And I believe I made history there, where I swept everything. I didn't get the FISM North America. That went to Nicholas Dutel out of Canada. But I won the IBM, the SAM, Silver Award of Merit, the People's Choice Award, and originality award.
I remember you walking away with a lot of trophies in your hand.
Oh my gosh. It's like, what the heck just happened? Yeah. And so, I felt, you know, pretty confident that, I'd get the nod, and they said, yep, you can go to FISM. So, that was my launch pad,
you knew you were going to be going then right away. I mean, I know I've talked with some people who have won, but they had larger acts and assistants and illusions, and they started thinking, oh, this is going to be cost prohibitive, and, you know, do I really have a chance to win, and is it going to be worth me spending another $20,000 just to say I've competed in FISM? In your case, you have a lot of stuff that you're packing also. I mean, you don't have a lot of assistants, but you probably got a lot of cases and everything too.
No, I redesigned everything to fit into two cases that go right under the plane. It's like 47 pounds a case.
Wow.
And that includes clothes. So I've made sure that the act was compatible with, you know, normal airplane flying, and it worked. So, yeah.
Well, that was great. So leading up to that, so when you got to Busan and you started going through, I assume that there were rehearsals beforehand, or what were some of your experiences?
There's so much going on.
Well, tell me.
to encapsulate it is going to be, it could take a long time. But the first thing that happens when you, I'll just back it up to, you know, when you're starting this journey, the first thing is that you are, you know, you spend probably about $12,000 to do this thing, and you assemble a team. So I brought Lori along, and I brought Michael Ewan as my technical director, and we're all like, okay, we just have to make sure that the bags get there. We know that we'll get there, but will the bags get there? And then are the bags have funky stuff in it? And are they going to clear customs? How many questions are they going to ask? And all this other stuff. And then we're transferring flights. You know, we land in Seoul, and then you have to go through transfer customs, and then just so many steps.
Right.
And we're like, and we put it in phases. You know, phase one, okay, all right, we can get rid of that, you know, anxiety. And then finally, we get to the hotel. and we're like, clear, we're good to go. And then the first thing is that you I didn't have to go on until Thursday, so my tech rehearsal was on Wednesday. So I had the distinct pleasure of watching the first day of competition. And some guys don't do that. They don't watch the competition. They go to all the lectures and they experience the other side of the convention. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you know, I've seen a lot of lectures, but I mean, everybody comes to FISM to watch the competitors because you've got 130 people from different countries showing unique acts. And I'm like, lecture? I can see these guys in other different places or, you know, buy their lectures online. So I was like, yeah, okay. So the first act was an illusionist from Mexico, and I don't know if he understood the rules. He just did one trick, and it was just a levitation. That's all he did.
And was he in the inventive or new creation?
No,
that wasn't the category?
No. For him, he just stood there, and there was this dialogue that played for 5 minutes, and all he did was just walk around.
Wow.
Okay. It was really weird. Hats off to him for coming.
I know that for invention, they just have one thing, kind of a one-trick pony. It's like, you know, this is my invention, and I'm here to compete for that. And that's not necessarily for a performance, but just to see if the invention is something that would qualify. So that's not what this guy was.
I don't remember seeing invention under his name, so I
okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of people, I don't think, actually have attended FISM in the past, and so they don't know what they're going to be getting into. They have competed on a local level, regional, or maybe even national level that have put them into this international spotlight, basically, and I think when they get there, it's a lot different than what they had imagined. So if they've never been to a FISM nor seen the quality of competition, I think some people get there and bit surprised. I mean, and that guy may have been one of them.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, a lot of people don't realize. Well, I'll tell you what, this FISM was the biggest leap forward in magic I've ever seen.
Wow.
I mean, I thought the tsunami in 2014 was a big deal, but when you look at Yu Ho Jin's act that he won in, what, it was 2012?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah. That's old news. I mean, that's like easy.
Compared to what they're doing now? Wow, no kidding.
Yeah, I mean, that's an overstatement.
Yeah, yeah.
But the second guy was a dove guy, and I don't know his name, but he was from Korea, of course. And so he did Dove Productions like they were a split card fan.
Wow.
No silks, no nothing, just reaching in the air and there's a dove on his finger.
Yeah.
And we're like, what the heck just happened?
Wow.
Yeah, it was really weird. And then he drank a bottle of a cup of wine, and he breathed smoke out of his mouth without any means of getting the smoke in his mouth. Hmm. And then but because it was red wine, his gloves visibly changed from white to red.
Wow.
Slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And then he blew the smoke out into his hands, and there was a dove. And then he just reached slowly over to the dove, and it just like melted into two doves. And he put them into his cage. So now he's got four doves in his cage. And he just gestured toward the cage. And the doves slowly and visibly changed to deep blood red.
Wow.
And then they vanished. The cage fell apart. And he took his bow. And the house went crazy. And everybody stood up. And that was just the second act. I looked at Lori and I said, I've lost. And they're like, no, everybody's encouraged me. And I'm like, come on. no way. And I'm like, and that's just the second act. We've got 100 more to go.
Yeah,
and I'm like, ugh. And so So you have to fight those feelings, right? And
in retrospect, are you glad that you saw some of these acts? Or
absolutely, okay, yeah, absolutely. I went in there with the idea that you got to have no ego, and you got to have this idea of like, okay, you got this competitive spirit. I want to see the competitors, but I also want to see what's out there, because you want to improve your act. You might get some ideas, but I. When I see competitors out there, it doesn't make me go, oh, I'm done. I'm just not going to do as well. So I'm just going to walk through my act. It's like, no, I mean, I came all this way. I'm going to do the best I can. But it was really fun watching these guys. And I stood and I'm like, that's amazing. You're a god. Where is your altar?
Well, it seems that there are fewer and fewer stage acts in the United States, and I know, like in conventions here in the States, that it's easy to get booked as a close-up guy. It's hard to get booked as a close-up guy because there are so many people doing close-up. Perhaps it's easier, cheaper. Younger guys are getting into that, into more sleight of hand, as opposed to doing the larger stage productions and to be creative the way that you have been to create that act. Which, by the way, as I recall, you fool Penn and Teller. Is that right, too, as I remember?
Yep.
You're on TV and had done that as well. So there are a lot of things that people need to do, I think, along the way in order to get more credibility to build up to the point where that they can do this. But my point is that there are fewer and fewer contestants in the U.S., at least, that are entering into the stage contest. They're entering into close-up contest, but not the stage contest. And so, again, it seems that it's easier if you have a stage act to actually get booked in a convention. But the problem is, what we have, something like 50 people from the U.S. that were actually competing over at FISM, which is off from previous years, from what I understand. And if we're not having good quality people to send over, such as you, then there needs to be some radical shift or, paradigm shift or something, I would think, within the conventions or something for the organizers to do, or dealers, I don't know who. Somebody's got to try to encourage more people to be more like you or to be creative and to work on stage shows and contests.
There weren't 50 of us. There was only like maybe 6.
Is that right? Yep.
Yeah.
Now, you're not including close-up, though, either. That's just stage,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, close-up. There's only 2 close-up guys.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, there was a couple extra close-up.
Yeah, there may have been, maybe Lori said maybe 2 others, but I don't
3 or 4
close-up. We did not have 50 people there. I thought we even had 10.
I wonder if that figure might have been for all of North America, which included Mexico and Canada, possibly.
Yeah, well, if it included all of North America, Canada didn't have that many. I don't know. You'd have to really look at the score sheet, because the score sheet is out on FISM website. But yeah, Gare Copper, he Facebooked me, and I'm getting Facebook messages from people that legends in magic that I'm like, really? You're following me? I mean,
wow, Gare Copper, that's incredible.
Yeah, he saw the act, and he, because I said, I'm 8th in the world in general magic, and he said, hey, you're in excellent company to be in. And he said it was really great to see an American on stage because there are so few doing it. Mm-hmm. And I heard that over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And
That score sheet, and yeah, you were listed as 8th, which also was the first in general magic in the U.S. I mean, there were no other American competitors that were above you, but you were 8th in the world for this competition. So congratulations on that. That's great.
Thank you,
Stuart. Well, tell me some other stories. So what else happened? You said I've got some stories I want to share with you.
The guy, that Dove guy I told you, he got like, I think, 5th. So it's like,
wow.
There were 10 acts that were in the general magic category, which is my category, that got standing ovations. I was one of them. And so we had our little meeting afterwards, and we're like, I think it's a roll of the dice to see who's going to win this category, because they're all deserving. And I didn't say, I tell you what, one of the experiences that I had and if I seem all over the place, it's because I'm still, you know, jet lagged.
I understand.
But
I'm taking advantage of that.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things is that I warned all the other competitors, because I was one of the first to go, is I said, look, as soon as you're done with your act, you're going to have deep depression. And it'll be – you're going to bottom out. You're going to crash, because I did. Because when I – and I didn't realize it, but I went back to my seat and joined my group, because I just wanted to see the rest of the competition. And they go, Stu, you did a great job. And I go, I did all right. And so I brought a whole group down. They're like, no, you did fine. I'm like, I could have done better, you know, beating yourself up.
But you had a standing ovation.
Exactly. I know I did good, but the crash is so immediate. And there's nobody backstage giving you a hug. You know, like in theater, and I've been in lots and lots of theater productions and musicals, and everybody cries at the end, you know, all your best friends. And the only best friend that you have are the props that you have on stage, and they're not going to hug you.
They're not going to judge
you. Yeah, they're not going to hug you. They're not going to judge you. They're not going to do anything. But it's just like there's no human being back there that's going to give you a hug and say it's okay. And so, yeah, the amount of pressure that you put yourself under is like this huge train wreck that you know is coming. And what I mean by train wreck, it's just like this train that you've developed over 4 years is coming to an abrupt stop at the station. And when it's done, it's done. You know, you've been wrestling with this baby for so long. And then finally you're like, really, this is it? It's done. It's this really weird, empty feeling. And I asked every performer if they had the same feeling, and they said yes. And I said, was it over with in about an hour? And they said yes. So it's like this, like for 1 hour, you're just moping around, because it's like, what do I do with my life now?
I can kind of see that, I guess, because that you, all your performing or at least competitive career, that you are working on this act, refining, honing it, finding places where you can perform it, where you can enter contests and reach something. And the pinnacle, of course, what you're striving for is to be able to compete on that international level at the FISM. And then once it's over, it's like, what do I do? Go from here. I guess it's like working Carnegie Hall. Once you've done it, it's like, well, where do I go? You know?
Well, yeah, where do you go? What's next? How can I improve it? But and the judges even haven't even deliberated yet, and you're already saying I've lost.
How did you feel whenever that they were getting ready to announce the winners of the category? I mean, you had to be just sitting on pins and needles.
No, I wasn't. I knew I wasn't in the top three. There's just no way.
You would have been shocked.
I would have been totally, like, bamboozled. That I would have won anything. And but when I saw eighth place, I think I'm more excited about eighth place than second or third.
That's funny.
Because, you know, I'm in the top 10.
world.
Of the world. Or if you really want to keep your ego in check, of the people that showed up that day.
Now, did they give you, I assume there's not a trophy for that, but you get at least an award of merit or participation or something or what?
Nope. Nothing. You get your scorecard. That's it.
And a handshake, or did you get that?
Gay, I forgot his last name. He's from Sweden. He was a backstage manager. He did the coolest thing. His production management was amazing. Right before I walked on stage, he said, "Enjoy your next 10 minutes." I will always remember that till the day I die, because he knew what we all went through to get to this point. And when he just smiled at you and said, just enjoy the next 10 minutes. In other words, he was saying, don't worry about anything. Be in the moment. You're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And that was the best part for me right before I walked on stage. It's like, yeah, you're right. Everything is going to be over with in 10 minutes, so just enjoy it. So that was cool.
And so leading up to that point, you had a little bit of anxiety, I assume?
Nope, none. Right. When you get to a point where you're at, with the act, if you've prepared yourself enough. By the way, his name is Gay Lindbergh. Gay L.J. Jungberg. Anyway, that's so no, I didn't have any anxiety at all because of the way I developed this act is it's a character piece. There's no audience. So I'm just responding to the environment that's around me. I'm not mugging the audience. I'm not. When a trick is done, I don't pause and go, ta-da, give me applause.
Right, right.
You know, so it's a play, and I treated it that way. And so every time I do it, I'm in my living room, I'm in my basement, or I'm on another stage that I was just at, or I was at the Magic Castle. It doesn't matter. And so that had a lot of power for me to calm my nerves, because I had no nerves going into this. And I always tell people that I have taken all the complicated mechanisms out of this act. Mm-hmm. I've shaved everything off to say, how can I make the same effect happen so that it is as easy as possible, so nobody sees my hand shaking because I'm excited or nerved up. I want it to be as simple as Dove and Balloon. And right. So I call this act Dove and Balloon. I walk out on stage and I'm fully confident that everything will work. And if something doesn't work, it's not the end of the world, because I've foolproofed just about everything with this act. So I went out there with ultimate confidence and really took Gay's advice and lived in the moment. And I can recall everything.
That's great.
That happened.
Yeah. That's good advice for others who might be looking at competing, and not just on an international level, but also if they're competing anywhere, local, in their club or wherever, you know, to take that advice. That's great. And so after you had finished your performance and you felt like, okay, well, this is it, you know, where do I go from here? And you kind of had passed over that after about an hour. Did you actually then kind of sit and relax and really enjoy the rest of the performances?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was at that point, I was really supportive of everybody else. You know, I helped everybody that needed help. And it was just helping with applauding and sure. Getting the audience and our group excited and just seeing some of the best magic I've ever seen, and watching magic take a step, another giant leap forward. It was history making. It was just amazing.
Well, there's something about the camaraderie, certainly, of competitors, because they are, you know, in the trenches, I guess, as opposed to being in the audience. There's nothing like actually, you know, competing against each other, because you create lifelong friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We, like Eric Buss and I, Steve Owens, the three of us were at the Magic Castle for the week prior to, and Chris Randall was unable to be in that group at the castle. He was doing Masters of Illusion in Vegas. Uh-huh. So the three of us really had a tight bond, and we helped each other out. When props would break, you know, I gave Eric Buss one of my reels, and he helped me fix something else, and mm-hmm. I helped Steve helped me, and it was just this circle. We wanted each other to be as best that we could be, and that was really fun. And there's no jealousy between any of us. Matter of fact, we Eric Buss, and you know Eric is a funny guy.
Yeah,
he would just say right before you go on stage, "Don't suck." Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, that's what I need.
Yeah, and then he said, "Need I remind you, we're going to a magic convention to compete for a trophy, so keep that in mind."
Yeah. Against each other. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, aside from your own personal experience in competing there, what was one or two other things that come to mind that was an immediate highlight, I guess, or maybe even a low light from the convention?
Well,
it could
there
be
was
something,
this,
I guess, the hotel or even food you ate, or restaurant or whatever.
Oh, no. Everything there was, there's Yujoji Yashuda. the guy who brought magic into Korea.
Yeah.
The guy from Japan. He gave this very moving speech on the Korean night. And it brought everybody to tears. Because he is trying to get – he tried really hard. He went to North Korea to find magicians there to bring them to this event. And he got all the government approvals and met with all the officials. And, I mean, the guy is trying to help unify the country through magic.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. And the Yuho Jin was the master of ceremonies for that show, and he was hysterical. He was great. And he goes, in a very sorrowful way, he just said, Korea is the only divided country on the planet.
Hmm.
And it sunk in. We're like, oh, no, where is this going to go? And Yoshida broke down and just flat out was bawling, just crying. Because 3 days prior to the Korea night, the government pulled the approval of the North Koreans to come in and perform.
So none of the North Koreans actually were at the FISM competing?
No, they weren't going to compete. They were going to be in the gala show.
No,
Laurie said, yeah, and they were going to compete, but they just yanked them completely. And
wow.
And so... And magic is such a powerful force in Korea that I believe that for the first time, magic will actually play a political role in the helping get that country to be unified in some way or a closer way.
I guess just like ping pong did many years ago, back during the Nixon administration or whenever. Yeah.
And I'll tell you what. In the opening ceremonies, the mayor of Busan, now you got to think of it, that city is about the size of New York. And here's the mayor at a magic convention.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's how important that is. Wow.
Yeah. And then the congressman of that region was there declaring Busan to be magic city for the world. They want magic to be there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and they're going to build a theater to be completely dedicated to the performance of magic. And I'm like, holy crap. They are just saying, we are the mecca for all magic now.
Wow.
Yeah, and I believe that they'll do it.
Quite a
commitment. And I believe, it will be amazing, because one of the things that we all noticed is that every Korean act was their performance came from a totally different place than anybody from the West, and what it was is that you felt culture, you felt emotion, you felt moved. They had so much commitment to the art and performance of magic, but not just this, you know, I'm just going to perform a trick for you. It was a balance of all the elements of theater in this tight little, you know, 6 minute act that they put together. And you're just like, wow, I will never look at magic again. All of them were literally poetry in motion.
Wow.
With outstanding, like, mystery, where you're just sitting there agape going, I have no idea how he did that. and you're just sitting there going, I don't know anything anymore. And they just push the boundaries, and they're using every single tool of theater, too, which I find interesting. They're using tech. They're using black art. They're using the theater itself. They're using lighting.
Mm-hmm.
They're using all the elements that make a good performance great, and good writing and skill. Oh my God, the skill level of these teenagers is off the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And And that's what really kind of blew us away, is that the Koreans really, and the Asians, and I say the Spanish, Spain took away a lot of awards too. They all have brought something new to Magic, where it's taken a step forward. Then in Korea, I would say that there's rock stars, there's actors, and there's magicians. And wow. it's not a novelty in that country. That's by great, far.
Yeah.
By far. So that was an interesting lesson for me to say, oh, okay, this is really how the art could work.
If it's considered as an art and rather than just a birthday party kind of a thing, sure. Like
yeah.
Doing the here. Now, what about dealers? I assume that there were a lot of interesting items for sale that you don't see at other conventions.
Yeah, Lucas Crafts is probably the biggest leap forward on the dealer side. You're seeing a lot of 3D printed magic props, but Lucas Crafts has a lot of digitally programmed pieces that you can program yourself, and they also are coming out with an Erector set. So you can animate really? Your own props,
wow.
Yeah, and build anything you want,
uh-huh. Wow.
And yeah, it's like $600. I think it's $600, and it comes with an app. I mean, these guys are really just like, what the heck is going on here?
Wow, yeah. When you're saying take it to a different direction, that is interesting. And then finally, I was going to ask you. I assume that everyone was excited about bringing it to Quebec next year in Canada.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But and I think you're going to see a lot more Westerners make a go of it to go to Canada because it's in
just the proximity. You know, sure.
Yeah, it's the first time it's going to be in the West, in the Americas, in I think forever. So that's going to be a really cool. I'm going to go. I know that.
I've already registered myself as well, and I just had read something recently, I think on the Genie Forum, where they said that they've already had 500 people register, and they just opened it up a few days ago.
Yeah.
So they may be putting a cap on registration soon. So, well, listen, any last thoughts, and then I'm going to let you go.
Last thoughts? Oh my gosh, I haven't even scratched the surface, Scott.
I know, we could talk for a long time. I've got some other people on the podcast, so I want to try to keep this relatively tight.
Okay. Well, the final thoughts are, I would say, America, don't be afraid of failing and start competing and learn and you can compete at any age. But if you're going to compete, if you're going to do FISM or try to go for anything close to it, be aware that the Asians are going to be competing in the SAM and the IBM forever from now on. And we can't complain and say, oh, they're taking all the awards. It's like, no, you got to step up. You got to step up your game. And you have to get your little crying towel off and just say, okay, I'm going to have to learn. And they are very open about learning from them. A lot of these guys that have won FISM, especially like Lucas, he has a whole series of DVDs of every single thing that he does in his act.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no like Anson Lee has a whole series as well as even the cards that he uses and shows how he indexes them so you can produce color after color after color.
Uh-huh.
So it's like the excuses, it's like, okay, the time for excuses is over with. Stop blaming the Asians. The Asians are the ones who the ones who are actually advancing the art of magic, and we should be thanking them for like pushing it. And making us go, oh, okay. Because here's the other thing that I'll add too, is that from my era, when we did billiard balls, the whole idea was, no shell. We're not going to use a shell because I'm really skilled.
Right.
You know, that was the thing, at least when we were growing up. It's like, no shell. Oh, if you're doing a shell, you're a loser. you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
I remember that. It's like we would buy our billiard balls and throw the shell away. These guys are using not only the shell, but they're using a shell that's capped so that you've got three balls in one, and they're using gimmicks in a way that we should have been using a long time ago, because they're using technology that we've had forever, but for some reason we've got our heads up our behinds about gimmicks in manipulation or for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. But when you're on stage and you're doing magic, it's a war. You should use every technique that's available to you and not be afraid to use or ashamed to use a gimmick. If you're using it well, who cares? Make the magic as best as you can.
It's the effect that's important.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, I think that that's another interesting lesson to be learned, and just don't be afraid of these guys. We should be embracing them and thanking them for getting us out of the 1970s, you know.
That's great. Well, I hope that this certainly is a lesson to be learned, and maybe some of these acts might be on YouTube, and some of the people who are interested in competing will take a look at that and kind of see where their game needs to go to be stepped up, or if they haven't had an opportunity to attend some conventions. Like when we were at the IBM convention, the two young ladies who won the gold medal there that were in the competition just before that you came on were fantastic, and apparently they were part of one of the, I guess, the Chinese circus, and it was only about a year ago they started incorporating magic into their act because they'd been doing juggling and some other stuff and had won because of the magic that they did. I mean, the rest of it was beautiful as well, but there was a lot of magic that happened in their performance. So,
well, yeah, and that's the other, you know, that I know you got to wrap this up, but the other takeaway is that if we really want more Americans to get into magic, we have to start thinking of it as more of a team. Because that those Chinese ladies, I thought that they, when I was backstage with them, I thought, oh, they're is that their father? And they said, no, I'm the coach.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh, yeah. So that wasn't their parents back there. That was their team. And Spain had a team. Korea had a team. China had a team. Taiwan had a team. And America, it's just like this mixed bag of individual guys. And
I can see that. Most people, seems like within the U.S., feel like, well, I can do it all. And they don't call on someone to be a director or a coach or a producer or someone who can help them to block and to choreograph or to script. They think, well, I can handle that all myself, and I really don't need the help. And I think that shows whenever that they are put in comparison with these others who do have that team.
Well, I think it's like they're a team because they practice together.
Sure.
I mean, they come together like at the end of the month, and we're scattered all over the country, and we just don't share our secrets. We don't share our skill level or our passions or everything. We keep close to the vest because we don't want anybody to copy it.
Yeah.
And I think that holds us back a little bit, but I was really shocked at how we were just not represented well, and it's like it's got to change, because we just don't have just look at the competition in SAM and IBM. It's low,
right,
for America, and you just have to get new kids and start recruiting and start mentoring. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I got back into competitive magic at this age. It was I saw the gap in America, and I'm not saying I'm trying to be a hero about it. I'm just saying, look, guys, it's not an embarrassment. I mean, I was a pro for 20 years,
yeah,
and I've had the time of my life doing this, and why are we not, you know, if I can inspire young kids to reach a little bit farther, then yeah, so be it. As a matter of fact, in the airport in Korea, right before we left, I was standing in line and I saw this kid standing there, and he looked Asian, and he had a top hat on his t-shirt, and I go, magic? And he dropped everything that he had, and he said, Mr. McDonald, I've always wanted to meet you.
Wow.
And I'm like, what? and he was from New Jersey. and it made my day.
Yeah.
But he had been following my act ever since I decided I was going to, you know, make a go for FISM. And I'm getting that from all over the place. I mean, just look at when I put my scorecard up, I think I've got like 400 people,
Well deserved.
Yeah. So there you go.
Well, thank you very much, Stuart. I appreciate that. And as we said, we could probably talk a lot longer and perhaps in the future after this has kind of sunk in and you've had some sleep and you kind of start to sift out these things and stories and all kinds to, you know, come together, we can sit down for another longer discussion over there. But I thank you for your comments over there, particularly since it is so fresh and that people are interested to know what happened over there. So thanks for the stories and thanks for letting us know.
You're very welcome. So, anytime.
For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Stuart McDonald. And congratulations again, my friend. This is Scotty out.
Thanks, Scott.
Well, there you have it. A couple of inspirational chats with people who have made their dreams come true. One who has always wanted to have a magic shop, and he finally put that together. And someone else who always wanted to compete at FISM and focus all of his competitive strength towards getting there to the world championships and has finally accomplished it. I'm always glad to talk with successful people who can hopefully inspire you and others to go forth and try to do the same. So with that, and until next week, stay well, get booked, and always do your best and strive for grabbing that golden ring. This is Scotty out.